We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John McCumsky coming to you from my home in Northfield, Minnesota.
And this is Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark coming to you from where I serve as pastor at Ascension Lutheran Church in beautiful, albeit humid, South St. Louis.
Yeah, that's right.
And John just laughs in his low humidity. Yeah. Mild temperature home there in Minnesota.
Well, I'm here because this is my wife's desire. She said, we need to move up north to be closer to some of my kids. And of course, this is the time of the year you go. Not December, Matt. We'll be back home, trust me, come November, December, because you don't want to be up here then. But right now, it's not a bad place to be. I want to do something a little different. We usually do a little opening or something, but I actually have kind of an opening thing I want to do. But let's get started right away with the text, okay? And then you'll see why I'm postponing the opening. We want to look at Luke chapter 15. For those who use what we call the one-year lectionary, and there was a time when everyone used the one-year lectionary, right? It was just what all the churches did. We had a set of lessons for every Sunday of the year. And if so, you would have heard a story about Jesus and lost sheep and lost coins. And those are the texts that I want to look at today, if we could. And because what I love about the story of the lost sheep is it shows that Jesus was a master teacher. And I'll explain what I mean. If you don't mind reading Luke 15, verses 1 and 2.
Oh, great chapter, John. Oh, just fantastic parables. All right, verses 1 and 2. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them."
So here's why I call him a master teacher. Because how do you face this challenge that you have two totally opposite groups that you're talking to? You've got people that are there because they want to hear him. Right, this tax collector sinners. That's why they're there. They just want to hear what Jesus has to say. And at the same time, you've got Pharisees and scribes, and they're just there to grumble. That's all they're there for. Yeah. They don't want to hear. They just want to grumble.
Yeah.
And yet Jesus has to come up with a story that on the one hand will challenge these scribes and Pharisees, help them see that they're sinners too, and yet at the same time did not diminish the great comfort of God's love and mercy to the sinners. Would you not agree that that is a challenge, Matt?
Well, it sounds like a Sunday morning at church, John.
Wait a second. See, now that's my point. See, I'm assuming that everyone who's, why would you turn on Wrestling with the Basics unless you wanted to hear, right?
Yeah, yes.
But again, actually, what you said, I got to thinking, well, I don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
So here's what we want to do that we've never done before in Wrestling with Basics.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of scared where you're going with this chat.
Well, just give me a second. Matt, maybe Matt's right. Maybe we do have some Pharisees, hypocrites listening to us this morning. Or the afternoon, even whenever you happen to be listening to the podcast, could I ask you to please raise your hand if you are a hypocrite? Okay. I'm waiting to see if anyone raises their hand, man. People don't understand that. It surprises me where people will listen to podcasts because we can see everyone who's listening to us right now. People don't people understand that?
Yeah. Well, one guy on the toilet over there, John.
No, I'm trying not to look at him. Okay, see, television, you get to see the people, but people don't understand that. Yeah, we can actually see you. Well, you know what, Matt? So I went to my wife first. Yeah.
Our listening audience is going to take a nosedive after this show. No one's downloading Marcy on the Basics anymore. We don't get it.
They'll be covering themselves up at least. They won't be listening to it in the bathroom anymore. Well, anyway, so no, of course, we can't see people. But actually, I preached this at the church I was filling in for a fellow who was on vacation. And I asked the congregation because I said, again, I'm assuming you all here to listen to hear, but raise your hand if you're, and I was giving it to my wife, and Lynn raises her hand right away. Okay. Yeah. And I said to the people there where I was preaching, and I would say to all of our listeners, yeah, we all should raise our hands. Shouldn't we, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, you have an honest wife, John. Yes.
I think there's a little. Well, what was the big complaint? What was about the scribes and Pharisees? How did Luke describe them? What were they doing?
Here in the text, John?
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're there. I mean, they're really there to grumble and complain against Jesus, right? Because of who he's associating with, the sinners and the tax collectors.
So the thing is, you know, when you're in seminary, we were taught to be critical. That's how we're trained to be critical. Mm-hmm. And I think its intention is to make us better preachers, that we're supposed to be critical of ourselves, critical of our sermons. It's hard to shut that off, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that I'm retired, I spend as much time in the pew as I do in the pulpit. And I would have to admit, there's a lot of times I leave church and I'm, man, that was a long service. They kind of cut some of that stuff out.
It's different when you're the one in the pew. Yeah.
That was a boring sermon. I've never heard such a boring, not you, not whenever I listen to your sermons.
Surely
no.
not. Yeah.
No. Sometimes I fall asleep in my own sermons. So that tells you something about how boring they are. So we do grumble. And you know, the thing is you and I are addressing people that are probably really good, faithful Christians. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if people not only listen to us, and yet they will still get up and go to church on a Sunday morning. Why would you bother? You've heard us. Isn't that enough? But no, they will go. And my goodness, especially on a summer Sunday when you could be fishing or camping or sleeping in, you get up and you go to church. Surely God owes you something for that, doesn't he? Or the thing is, I look around and I see all the corruption and evil in this world, and I'm thinking, thank God I'm not like those sinners. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can't comment for you or anybody who's listening to us, but we can see you. So just beware of that. Hypocrisy.
Go ahead. It's true, John. You know. People hopefully not coming as Pharisees describe in unbelief, and maybe some are at least searching, though. I'll say that. But I think even as Christians, the pride that we have in our hearts, we just kind of vacillate between pride and despair, John. The pride of the Pharisees or the despair of a tax collector and a sinner, you know, that either I'm a pretty good person and, you know, I hope God is seeing me here on a Sunday morning, or, you know, also, but then equally dangerous, the despair that, oh boy, can God even love me? You know, can I go to church, or is the walls going to fall in on me because I know my sin, right? So I think this is beautiful that Jesus is speaking to both groups, right?
Yeah.
He's speaking to the tax collectors and sinners, but he's also speaking to the scribes and Pharisees too. He's speaking to people coming out of pride, but also the people that might be coming before him because they're in despair over their sin, keenly aware of how how sinful and how much they've fallen short.
And I would say this in defense of our listeners and in defense of you and me, I think we don't want to be hypocrites. I mean, that's what's different here. They don't not see that they're sinners at all. Yeah. They really do think that they're good, holy people, and they cannot believe why Jesus would be wasting his time talking with people like these tax collectors. And I certainly hope and pray that you and I and all of our listeners, we're bothered by that. We see it in ourselves, but it bothers us. Well, anyway, let's because this is a beautiful story that does both that. It both condemns the righteousness, the self-righteousness in ourselves, and yet offers just, I don't think there's any finer comfort anywhere in the scripture other than the passages you were sharing last week. Those are some really fine passages about God's love and grace, and probably they reflect what Jesus says here in this parable. If you wouldn't mind reading verses 3 and 4, I think, would be a good place okay. to start.
And, you know, what a blessing for us to hear these words as preachers, too, John, you know, because if these are truly a reflection somewhat of the people in the pews, how does Jesus address them? And can we learn from Jesus, yeah, too, yeah. right, and on how to best preach to people, share the word with people that are perhaps in pride or despair. Okay, anyway, verses 3 and 4. So Jesus told them this parable. What man of you having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it?
Okay, so I believe this is where Jesus addresses the Pharisees and the grumbling scribes. I believe they are the 100 sheep, okay? If there's any doubt about that, at the end of the parable, he makes it pretty plain when he says there's more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Mm-hmm, if you know mm-hmm. who I'm talking to out yep, there, Jesus yep. says. All right, so these 99 sheep that are left there, they are the Pharisees and the scribes. And here's the thing. Where are they at, Matt? Where does it say they're at?
The open country.
Yeah, yeah. What you got? You're using ESV too, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. I wonder why. Do you have any idea why the ESV chooses the term open country there? Because the word and the King James hits it right on the head. The word is wilderness, and I don't know why they and they know it's wilderness because elsewhere. Well, I'll give you an example in just a moment. Elsewhere, they call it the desolate place, which is a good translation.
Yeah. Because the wilderness is not a safe place, right?
No.
So, you know,
no.
Jesus in the wilderness during his temptation, you know, the Israelites are in the wilderness,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
In their
yeah.
wanderings. You know, the wilderness is not a safe place. So for this shepherd to leave the 99 in a place that's maybe not ideal, it's not green pastures and still waters,
no,
right?
No.
It's the wilderness. And yet he still leaves them in search for this one. So I think that wilderness idea, John, it really emphasizes the love for the one, you know, that the yeah. shepherd has, that he's willing to even leave the others in the wilderness.
Well, and I think what he's trying to say to the Pharisees is, you don't realize how dangerous your position is.
Mm.
You don't think you need me. You just want to grumble and complain. But man, you don't know, you are in, and thank you for the illustrations you gave there, because that's exactly the sense of the word. It's a place, well, I would say you could call it the Valley of the Shadow of Death.
No, there you go.
Yeah. Because there's nothing here.
Yeah.
If you're a sheep, you're going to die here, unless you have a shepherd, of course, then you're okay. Because as you already illustrated, the shepherd can lead you to green pastures and still waters. Thank you for bringing that reference up. And in fact, here's the great thing about the shepherd. This shepherd is so fantastic. He can even take care of you while you're in the wilderness, right?
Yeah.
You gave us a perfect example. What did God do for the children of Israel?
Yeah, well, he gives them manna, right? He gives them quail. He gives them water. He gives them what they need even during those 40 years.
And here's how I know that Luke understands what this word means, because Luke tells the story about the 5,000 who are yeah. in the wilderness. In fact, that's the word he uses. In fact, the disciples say, oh, Jesus, you got to send these guys away. Send them off to the villages. Send them off to their homes because they're in a desolate place. The same word we have in our text. There's nothing for them to eat here. They're gonna get hungry. They're going to starve if they stayed there. And of course, Jesus just turns around and feeds all 5,000 men and who knows how many women and children with so much food, there were 12 baskets left over, okay? But on the other hand, if you're in a wilderness without a shepherd, it don't look good for you. Let me just put
mm-hmm.
it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it don't look good for you at all. So I think it is a very powerful warning to these Pharisees and sinners and probably to us too, that you need to know where you're at. You're in a wilderness. You better have yourself a shepherd or you're in really bad trouble.
Yeah. So, Jesus is kind of, you know, to use terms we use as Lutherans a lot, yeah. long gospel in a lot
yep.
of ways,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know, kind
yeah.
of a word of law to the Pharisees that, yep, you're in the wilderness and you're shepherdless, perhaps. Be warned. But then also this gospel message that, oh, the shepherd willing to go and search out that one lost sheep. So, you know, this word of gospel for those who are the tax collectors and sinners, the lost sheep among his audience that day.
Well, let's do the gospel part of it, because that's what it's really about, isn't it? Read that verse 4 again. We won't focus on being in the open country, the wilderness, but we'll focus on the great gospel. Read that verse again if you can.
Sure. Yeah, what man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it?
I love that last phrase, until he finds it,
yeah.
Right? He don't stop. He keeps looking. The search continues. It will not end until he has located this beloved sheep that he cares for.
Yeah.
What, man, is that not a great hope for all of us? None of us are hopeless cases. You talked about that a moment ago, about the despair that maybe, well, God can't love me. I don't have enough faith, or I'm too sinful. No, he just keeps looking. He will not stop until. And I found this particularly comforting because we probably have people we love and we care for, and we think maybe they're lost, and we worry about them. We wonder how their end will come. And I think it's just important for us to know, hey, God never gives up on him. Maybe you have a child. Maybe you have a spouse. God never gives up on them. Don't you give up on them either. You just keep loving and caring for them. And here's the thing. Now that I'm 73 years old, I realize I may not see the end of everything. God may decide to take me home before it's all over and done with. But I need to understand God, even when I die, he will not stop in his love and his care for the people that I know, for my children, for my dear friends. And he's not going to stop until he finds them. Any thought that you want to add to that, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, the word that comes to my mind as you're talking, John, is relentless. You know, he's relentless, this shepherd, in his love and care for the lost one in particular. Searches until he finds it. And as sheep of the shepherd, right, well, look, we want to reflect that too, like you said, that for those of us who have loved ones who maybe are straying away from the flock, right, just straying away from the church, That we too would pray that, you know, Lord, give me that kind of relentless seeking after them so that you might make me your instrument in bringing them back to the fold.
Yeah. And thank you for the word relentless. We're going to have another word that is similar as we move later, diligently. Mm-hmm. But we'll save that. We'll save that for a little later. Read the next verse because this gets even better. Not only doesn't he stop until he finds it, read what he does then in the next verse. The next verse.
Yeah, and this is a beautiful picture. Verse 5, and when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing.
So what's beautiful about that verse, man?
Oh, I mean, I love just the image that it has, right?
Yeah.
You know, the laying on the shoulders, and, you know, I think of so many pieces of art where it's Jesus the Good Shepherd with a sheep on his shoulders, and if we can even picture ourselves as that lost sheep, what a comfort that is. And then the rejoicing, right? And it's not like a scolding of the sheep, you know, although maybe he did scold. But he rejoices ultimately, right, that he's bringing them home, rejoicing. Yeah.
So I thought I had worked every possible thing out of this text, but now you have revealed a new thing to me. Well, first of all, that was my thought. Because trust me, if I was the shepherd and I had been walking for days maybe in the heat of the wilderness and I found this stupid, dumb sheep that wandered away, believe you me, I'm going to whip that little sheep's behind until he gets back to the flock. I ain't going to be carrying it on my shoulders. But here's the thought I never had. He's not only carrying it, which is just a wonderful picture, right? Because he's not losing the sheep again. I'm holding the sheep. I'm carrying it back. But he's happy about it.
I know. You try carrying a sheep that far, see if you're going to be happy about it.
But
rejoicing. You're right.
Yeah. And again, thank you, because usually the pictures show a little lamb, but it doesn't say lamb here. It says sheep.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably some 200-300 pound sheep he's got on his shoulders. And yet, thank you for reminding. He's rejoicing. And let's wrap it up then with the next verse then, Matt.
Yeah, verse 6. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep that was lost.
And I love that. It's my sheep, see?
Oh, yeah.
That's why he's rejoicing. Yeah. That's why the excitement. That's why he doesn't stop until he's found it. That's why he carries it home, because this is his. It belongs to him. And you had alluded to baptism earlier. And see, that's why baptism is so important, because that's the sign that we are his sheep, right? We had the names of our mother and father, and now he puts his name on us, the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. We belong to him, and that's the great comfort we have. He ain't giving up on us, people. Yeah. Believe you me. That's why it's so important that we baptize our infants, too, so we know, these are not just our children, but they are the very sheep of Jesus Christ. And finally, the last verse, then, if you would, Matt.
Yeah. Let's see here.
Verse 7.
Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance.
So if I could, I would like to now apply this parable to you, to me, and to all of our listeners. I think we need to understand we are in the wilderness, Matt. And probably I don't need to prove that, because all you got to do is look around and see the illness that you might be struggling with, that your loved ones might be struggling with, the problems at work, you know, the loved ones who've already passed and died. Yeah, there's plenty of evidence that this is a wilderness we're in. But I hope and pray that everyone understands you're in the arms of Jesus. That's what we're here for in Wrestling with the Basics, to remind people Jesus is carrying us right now. We may be in the wilderness, but his rod and his staff here in the valley of the shadow of death, they're comforting us. He's got us in his hands. And what I like about this parable is it's going to be true. Someday, Jesus is going to take us home. And all of our friends and all of our neighbors and all the people we love and care for who have already parted from this life, they're going to be there and they're going to be rejoicing to see us. And I tell you what, if you've ever had any joy, and I know you just had some great joy because your son was just married, and man, there's very few things that are as joyful as a wedding of our children. And yet that joy will not compare to the joy we'll have with our loved ones and with the angels, and especially, of course, with our Father and the Spirit of Jesus and Jesus himself. So there you go.
Yeah, that's beautiful, John, that this joy and rejoicing extends beyond this world, right? And that's what Jesus says, more joy in heaven over one sinner repents. So, you know, this rejoicing that happens even now when a sinner repents, but also, like you said, that rejoicing when we're brought home to heaven, right? Because of the Good Shepherd and him alone, and the rejoicing that's going to be there in his presence forever and ever.
Yeah. And it reminds me of the phrase I really love in our liturgy anyway for the Lord's Supper, with angels and archangels and all the company of heaven. And every time I take the Lord's Supper, I remember, my beloved wife, Jan, my dear granny, my grandpa, all these people, dad and mom. But now here's the interesting thing. That's enough, right? We could stop the show right there. Who needs more than that? And yet, for some reason, Luke says, no, I got to tell you one more parable. Matthew does it, by the way. Matthew thinks it's enough to know about the Good Shepherd. But Luke wants you to have one more story, so if we could read that really quick, Matt, the story of a lost coin.
Yeah.
So verse 8 through what, 10 there.
Okay. All right, Jesus continues. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents.
So why another parable? Why do we have isn't that cheap parable? That was enough. Why a parable about a lost coin? You ever thought about that, Matt? Any ideas?
Well, why not, John? I think... you know, one of the points that I've heard made before is, you know, a sheep, you know, at least a sheep, you know, in that illustration, well, the sheep could maybe wander back on its own, you know, and find its way and, you know, and maybe could be found that way. But a coin's, you know, an inanimate object, right?
Yeah.
You know, that lost coin, the only way it's going to be restored to its owner, the only way it's going to be found is if, well, the owner finds it, right, and seeks it out. And so to emphasize, I think just another dimension, perhaps, but at the same point, is this woman seeks diligently to find this coin, this inanimate thing, and then restores it and finds it, rejoices over it. Obviously, the coin didn't do anything to be found. The woman did it all, right? Did all the seeking, all the finding.
So it's kind of like what you were talking about with the call of Abraham last week.
Yeah. Exactly.
That there was nothing in Abraham himself, or nothing that what Abraham would do in the future that God might have seen, but it's just pure grace. It's interesting that the early church fathers, they kind of allegorized this, and so their thought was that the first parable is about what Jesus does, that Jesus seeks after lost sheep. And then the second parable is about what we should do, what the church should do, which is we should be also seeking the lost. And of course, with the fact that we are the bride of Christ, that's how the church is described.
Sure. It's
probably appropriate that we got a woman searching here for the coin. So that could be a valid point, too. And in fact, you know Lenski? Did you study Lenski when you went to seminary?
Yes, John.
Because I know you went to that other seminary, that St. Louis seminary. But did they have Lenski at St. Louis?
Oh, boy, don't even start, John. Okay. Yeah, so yes, the commentary, yes, New Testament commentary. Right. I've got it on my shelf behind me, John.
I see that, yeah.
So I hope that makes you happy.
But our listeners can't see that, man. We can see them.
We can see them, but they can't see
it. But I can see your library because, of course, when you're on the radio, you can see everything. But Lenski, he usually doesn't allegorize. He's pretty straight to the text. But even he says he thinks that the sweeping here is the law. That's the loss. Getting those coins out from the corner. The law condemning them, showing their sinfulness. And then the light that she lights, the lamp that she lights, well, that's the gospel. That's Jesus Christ. And, of course, that's what the Bible says, right? Jesus is the light of the world. I guess he'd be the light of lost coins then as well. Personally, though, I agree with what you said. I think it's just an illustration. Again, if you are found, it is because you were found, okay? However you might get back to Jesus, get into the church, ultimately realize, oh, this is Jesus who came and got me. What I really like about this text and why I'm glad that Luke does include it is, did you see the word that is described for the woman? How does she seek things there in verse 8?
Oh, yeah. There's that diligently word you brought up earlier. Diligently seeks until she finds it.
Yeah. And what was the word you used earlier? Do you remember?
Relentless.
Relentless. Okay.
Relentless.
Which, by the way, those are synonyms. Those are synonyms. What's crazy about this diligent word, though, Matt, it's a very common Greek word. In fact, we have any number of Greek references from other Greek literature, and it does mean just what you said, relentless. It means if you are diligent, you have a focus, and everything is focused on that. Nothing deters you from that. That's what you spend your whole life trying to get that accomplished. That's the idea of being diligently here. What's strange, though, this is the only place that word is used in the New Testament. It is used one place in the Old Testament, Genesis 6:5.
Okay.
The Lord, yeah, we talked about this a week ago too. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Ooh. So there's the word diligently, every intention continually. That's what it is to be diligent. Here it is, of course, about evil, but of course, in our text, it is about God's love and forgiveness and compassion and mercy, whatever word you want to use. And I got to thinking, that's a perfect description of Jesus, isn't he? He is diligent when it comes to finding the lost.
Yeah.
He is totally focused. He has only one job, only one task, only one thing he's concerned about, and that is bringing God's people to a place where there might be rejoicing over them. And of course, he'll be part of that rejoicing. Well, anyway, thank you for letting me share the parable with you, Matt, and with our listeners. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.